Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we've got a great show lined up for you. It is a show designed to air at the beginning of 2026. So if you're listening to it in the month of January 2026, this is when the show is being released. But it is a show whose content, it is applicable anytime you're listening. But why it's especially designed for a new year is we're talking about, you guessed it, New Year's resolutions. Don't turn the dial. Don't turn off the podcast. Let me tell you why you should be thinking about trying to improve your lifestyle just whenever you are listening to this show, whether it's the beginning of a year or sometime in the middle of a year or at the end of a year. It is never an inappropriate time to be thinking about things you can do differently that can make a difference for your health. But I love the tradition, whether I love the practice or not. New Year's resolutions. It's a new year, a time for change. Something's going to be different in the year ahead. With that in mind, let me tell you a story that relates to this subject. Happened not long ago in my clinical practice. Of course, when I tell you stories from my practice, I'm going to change the details and make sure that everyone's confidentiality is preserved. We're going to call this guy Zachary. Zachary has been in my practice for many years, and Zachary has got real serious problems with arthritis, in particular, his right hip. Terrible pain, terrible problems. He's had all kinds of injections, taking all kinds of medications. Still, nothing's getting better. He's had all those imaging studies, and he has seen the orthopedic surgeon who has told him this joint is terrible. So-called bone on bone. Nothing but pain, nothing but problems. He says you're going to need a hip replacement. Now, I don't know for you if talking with a surgeon and hearing about a need for surgery is good news or not. Actually, to Zachary, it was good news. He'd been dealing with this for a long time. He wanted to be done with it. He wanted to have that hip replacement. But there was a problem. His surgeon told him at the institution where he practiced, you had to weigh less than 300 pounds to have the surgery. And the problem was, Zachary was weighing somewhere around 360 pounds. And this was not because he was 8'2". He was carrying a lot of extra weight, and he had to do something. He had to get that weight down. If you think it's hard to lose weight when everything's stacked in your favor, I mean, at least as far as your ability to move around, make your own dietary choices, choose what kind of physical exercise you're going to do. If you think it's hard in that situation, you can only guess what it's like when you can't walk. How's he going to lose that weight? Another part of the story, though, I've been working with Zachary for some time, and he had other issues as well, including he had gotten hooked on commercial addictive tobacco. He was smoking a pack and a half a day. This was not helping his heart situation, his lungs. And we'd been talking off and on about all the reasons that he should think about walking away from that habit. When I talk with patients about breaking free of addictive tobacco, I'm always talking with them about resources that we can use to help them, whether it's seeing an addiction specialist, we have one in our practice, whether it's actually helping them with prescriptions, whether it's lifestyle counseling, whatever it might be. And Zachary, he knew that if he was going to have surgery, the orthopedic surgeon is not going to want him smoking. But I mean, there's a timeline, right? From 360 down to 300, that's going to take a while. But the new year is coming on. And again, I'm not telling you when I saw Zachary, but new year was coming on for him. And he started thinking, well, maybe it would be a good time to stop smoking. And when he mentioned that and I was connecting the dots, I remembered a radio show that I once heard. And some of you may have guessed it was actually on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Not only did I hear the show, I actually interviewed the guest. And it was quite a while ago. You may not remember the name of an orthopedic surgeon that I had on the show by the name of Edgar Wehmeister. But Dr. Wehmeister shared such a remarkable story that when I wrote a book about lifestyle change, a systematic program for lifestyle change that I called the Methuselah Factor. You know, you've heard of as old as Methuselah? Well, this book is about how to live longer and better. So that's the reason for the title. Anyway, in that book, The Methuselah Factor, on day 30, it's a 30-day program. On day 30, I actually quote from the radio show. I'm going to read it for you because I know most of you probably did not actually hear that episode. And if you did, it's likely not fresh in your mind. Let me read what I wrote in the book, The Methuselah Factor. During an interview on my syndicated radio show, orthopedic surgeon Edgar O. Wehmeister, M.D., shared a remarkable story. He related how a gentleman, who we'll call Robert, sought orthopedic care for severe hip arthritis. Appropriately, plans were made for total hip replacement surgery. So those of you that are listening in today, I mean, you're connecting the dots. Yeah, this would remind me. Zachary's case would remind me of this story. Well, let me continue. However, on the day of surgery, things went terribly wrong. Before the orthopedist could begin the procedure, Robert had a heart attack while undergoing anesthesia. He was quickly awakened and given the bad news. The surgery was canceled, and Robert found himself in the coronary care unit rather than the recovery room. Got the picture? No surgery, but dealing with a heart attack. Continuing with the narrative in the book. The sudden change of events motivated Robert to do all he could to optimize his heart health. Robert learned of the heart benefits of a plant-based diet, an approach to eating shown to help reverse the very blockages in coronary arteries that cause heart attacks. In short order, Robert adopted such an eating strategy. Although Robert likely never heard of the Methuselah Factor or hemorheology, and just as an aside to you listeners, hemorheology is the technical science of blood fluidity. So this book that I wrote, The Methuselah Factor, is based on how you improve your microcirculation. Okay? So he'd likely never heard of those things, but Robert was making lifestyle changes that were calculated to dramatically improve his blood fluidity. Continuing now the story that Dr. Wehmeister shared with me. After 6 months, Robert's orthopedist told him, "I think you're now ready to have your total hip replacement." However, Robert had a surprising response. "My hip is feeling better. I don't think I want a total hip replacement." Dr. Wehmeister later had an opportunity to review Robert's x-rays. He saw something remarkable. The original films taken shortly before his heart attack showed severe bone-on-bone arthritis. After his months on a Methuselah factor-optimizing lifestyle, Robert's x-rays had improved significantly. Dr. Wehmeister saw evidence of cartilage regeneration. Isn't this remarkable? So, just talking with you again, my listeners. So, Wehmeister basically is seeing evidence that the cushioning in the joint is regenerating. Presumably because Robert changed his lifestyle. Now, the story doesn't end there. Let me continue. During our interview, Dr. Wehmeister was careful to point out that he didn't expect this to be healthy, normal joint cartilage, but rather an alternate form of cushioning tissue known as fibrocartilage. Nonetheless, this regenerated tissue was having a profound effect in lessening Robert's pain. To Dr. Wehmeister's knowledge, that improvement was so marked that Robert never required hip replacement. If the take-home lesson is not already apparent, Dr. Wehmeister removed any doubt from my radio listeners. These improvements occurred as a result of better circulation. This was not an isolated instance. Edgar went on to explain how since that time, he has shared this message with other orthopedic patients with similar results. Now, isn't that remarkable? So, back to Zachary's story. I relate to him. What I included in the book and what I just read for you, I actually didn't have the book in my hand, so I didn't read the story. I just told it to him. And I was sharing it with him to say, you know what? One of the major risk factors for poor circulation in the microcirculation in the tiny blood vessels is addictive tobacco smoking. Now, Zachary was already thinking about making the break with the cigarettes, and it seemed that that helped to increase his resolve. So, why do I tell you the story? I tell you the story because you may be dealing with something similar. It may not be arthritis, the risk factor may not be cigarette smoking, but it may be something else. And if you would just make some lifestyle changes, you could change the whole trajectory of your future. Health, mental performance, physical performance, all of these things improve when we change lifestyle. So, let's talk about lifestyle change and New Year's resolutions. What I want to do in this show is try to give you some keys that will increase the likelihood of you being successful long term when it comes to making lifestyle changes. So let me tell you one of the most powerful secrets. Actually, it's the opposite of a secret. Or maybe it's the problem that's a secret. If it sounds like I'm talking in riddles, maybe I am a bit. But my point is simply this. Many people, when they make lifestyle changes, they don't tell anyone about it. They keep it a secret. And you would say, well, why would someone do that? Well, you know why someone would do it. You know why you would do it. You're not going to tell your friends that, hey, I'm making a break with, let's say, red meat. Let's say the doctor said, hey, you got all kinds of problems, or at least red meat that you can purchase in a store. Maybe you're going to still be hunting some wild game. Anyway, whatever decision you make, it's up to you, the decision you make. But you say, I don't want to tell people that I'm not going to go out to eat, and I'm not going to order any red meat. I'm not going to buy it in the grocery store. Because what would happen if, in a moment of weakness, I'm sitting in the McDonald's in town and one of my friends comes by who I had told that I was making this clean break with commercial red meat? Okay, you get it, right? We all know. We think if we don't tell anyone about our lifestyle changes, it is going to save us embarrassment. It will save us feeling like a failure more than we already feel like, since we made a decision and didn't stick with it. But here's the irony. Maybe it's not all that ironic. If you want to be successful in making lifestyle changes, then the most powerful thing you can do is share your decision with other people. Let me illustrate this with another practical example. Many of you, if you're regular listeners, you know we have a sister website called Timeless Healing Insights, plural, timelesshealinginsights.org. And there on that website, we have a free 30-day lifestyle program. When a person goes to the website, they see our program, 30 Days to Better Health. If you are hearing about it for the first time, and you went there right now, presumably you're not driving, you're maybe around your house, or maybe you're listening to a podcast, you hit pause, and you say, hey, I'm going to go to timelesshealinginsights.org. I'm going to scroll down. You don't have to scroll down far. You'll see 30 Days to Better Health. You click there and you sign up for the program. What's going to happen is every day you're going to get a link to a short video from me, roughly, on average, about 6 minutes, and we're going to walk you through a comprehensive lifestyle program. 30 Days to Better Health was originally designed to help you with high blood pressure and diabetes, but let me tell you where I'm going with this illustration. Because if you sign up for the program and you watch the videos for the first several days, before you get done with the first week, I'm going to give you an important message. And the important message is, if you want to have the best results on the 30-day journey that I'm guiding, you need to tell someone else about it. Let me just tell you. The goal for day 5, the challenge is, I'll read it for you, connect with someone else in a way that relates to this program. Electronic connections are okay, but face-to-face connections are preferred. So here's the first key. If you're wanting to make lifestyle changes in 2026, or whenever you're listening to this show, what I'm suggesting you do is come up with a strategy and then share it with someone else. Can you do that? I'm Dr. DeRose. We've got a lot more coming up on today's edition of the broadcast. A lot of keys, a lot of strategies to help you be successful. We're going to talk about a number of specific lifestyle challenges, things that you can do, things that can make a difference. We'll be back with more right after this on American Indian and Alaska Native Living.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at AIANL.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, AIANL.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about helping you be in the driver's seat when it comes to lifestyle changes. Whether you're listening at the beginning of a new year and talking about New Year's resolutions, whether it's, hey, just saying, I got to make a change. This has been too long since I've been doing X, Y, or Z, or not doing something, that I've got to change the script. I got to flip that script and make better lifestyle choices. Trying to help you on that journey, what I shared with you in the first segment, the power of sharing your decisions with someone else. We cannot underestimate the power of that practice. For those of you that are maybe part of a tribal health committee, maybe you're working in a clinic, maybe you are a layperson, a tribal elder, maybe you're not even Native, but you're tuning into the show and you're saying, I'd love to see things different. What I would say is look at your home, look at your neighborhood, look at your tribe as a resource for making changes in a group setting. And it is so amazing to me. I remember some years ago, I was working with a tribe, gave us the privilege of trying to help improve the health of their tribal members. And what was really interesting to me, what we noticed is as different tribal leaders caught a vision for healthier lifestyles, those things were incorporated then into tribal events, into, they might take a break, an exercise break during a tribal council meeting, or they might change some of the menu options at certain venues to accommodate people who were trying to achieve certain lifestyle goals. Now, let me give you a very practical example, because some of you, I know whatever example I choose, someone can say, hey, that doesn't relate to me. Why are you choosing that as an example? And you'll notice in that story that I shared from my book, The Methuselah Factor, I mentioned someone getting away from a lot of meat eating, maybe getting away from it completely. I mentioned commercial meat, but it could apply to wild game as well. And let me tell you why. For decades, people have been talking about connections between red meat and a host of problems. Now, in fairness to those of you in Indian country who live close to the land especially, if you look at research on red meat consumption, we're not looking primarily at people who are eating wild game. So I will tell you, from having looked at, you know, nutritional data, wild game is very different than animals that have been, you know, raised in feedlots, for example, or in these factory farms. But here's where I'm going with this. Just a few months ago, the American Public Health Association met for their annual meetings in Washington, D.C. Typically, I'm there in person. I enjoy meeting with the American Indian, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian Caucus. So there is a group of researchers, public health professionals, who especially represent Indian country. Really some amazing meetings, everything from talking about wisdom of the elders to talking about cutting-edge research that is being done in tribal communities. So love to be there. I was able to take in some of those meetings remotely or by way of recording. One of the meetings that was not, I don't think this was from a Native session, but was presented by a researcher working with the State Health Department in the state of Arkansas. And they were looking at a specific condition that has really just begun to grab headlines. It's called alpha-gal syndrome. And some of you may realize that this is an allergic reaction that develops in people to, as this researcher described it, non-primate mammalian products. So in other words, could be something like red meat from a cow. In September of 2023, this researcher shared how Arkansas became the first state to mandate reporting of this alpha-gal syndrome. And the way people get this condition, it is actually contracted or induced by a tick bite. Okay, so person can eat red meat, wild game, commercial red meat, without any allergic problems. They've been doing it, let's say, their whole life. Then they get a tick bite, and this tick bite induces this condition, alpha-gal syndrome. They went through 3,400 positive lab reports, and they were able to identify individuals that were clearly cases, definitely cases, no question about it, roughly 400 individuals, another nearly 2,500 suspect as being cases, and then about another 350 who were definitely not cases. Here's what I want to share with you, though. Couple of things. First of all, how does this condition present? Because you may have this, and I've read some chilling things lately. In fact, not long ago, I read something that came out in the lay press about a pilot who had walked into a restaurant, ordered some meat, and the next day was dead. Mysterious death. When they evaluated it, this gentleman was the first known fatality from this alpha-gal syndrome. Well, what can it do? What kind of symptoms can it cause? And remember, this is an acquired disease. That means you never have any problem, and then all of a sudden, you get exposed to something, and now you've got a potentially serious problem. Listen to the most common symptoms. In this Arkansas state, we call it a case series. They're looking at individuals who have been reported to the state health department who have this condition. What kind of symptoms did they have? Over half of them presented with abdominal pain. Roughly half of them presented with hives, a skin rash, raised red itchy patches. If you know anything about hives, those patches kind of move around. They don't just stay in one spot. And nearly half of them with diarrhea. So abdominal symptoms can be rash, skin rash, and as I mentioned, rarely people can actually die from a severe allergic reaction. what kind of foods triggered these reactions. Most common food reported to cause a reaction, they said, was beef. That was some 65%, followed by pork, 47%, and milk or dairy products in 35%. Now, some of you are pretty good at math, and even if you're not good at math, you're saying, wait a minute, 65% beef, 47% pork, 35% dairy. That adds up to a whole lot more than 100%. And a lot of times in studies like this, the reason why it does that is someone maybe had beef and pork at the same meal, or milk and beef, or maybe there are multiple triggers that a person had recognized. I'm not sure why that doesn't add up to 100%, but the point is, it can be relatively common things. I've heard of cases, people just taking a medication, a prescribed medication that has a gelatin pill. If they're very sensitive, if this alpha-gal syndrome has caused severe sensitivity, that may even cause a problem. So, why am I telling you this story? I'm telling you a story because there's all kinds of reasons why you can say, I've got to change my lifestyle, even if you really didn't want to do it anyway. If you develop a severe case of this alpha-gal syndrome, you are going to have to avoid these kind of foods. And you say, well, how am I going to do that? Well, in the case of an allergic reaction, it's pretty straightforward. And I love this example because it's going to help us talk about things that don't have to be all or none decisions. So if you say, let's transition away from the red meat, and let's just say a healthy food like corn on the cob, good traditional native food. Let's say you're allergic to it. Let's say you have an anaphylactic reaction to corn, even heirloom corn. We're not talking about the genetically modified stuff. And you can't eat it. You can't even have a little bit of corn because you'll have a severe allergy. Your blood pressure can drop dangerously. You could even die. You carry one of those EpiPens with you, an epinephrine pen, auto-injector, so that if you start having symptoms, you can just quickly give yourself a shot. So when it comes to lifestyle change, if you make that connection, you're saying, not how can I cut down on corn, but how can I do what? How can I make a clean break with it? And what this illustrates something very powerful. The easiest decisions behaviorally are all or none decisions. Now, when I say it that way, you say, Dr. Rose, this is terrible. This is not easy. Corn is a staple for us. It's a staple in our culture. It's a staple in our tribe. Well, my point is behaviorally, it's easy. It doesn't mean it's not challenging to make the change, but it's very delimited. What you are going to do, it's not like you're saying, oh, can I have an extra 2 teaspoons of corn? No, it's zero. Zero corn is the only safe course for you. If you have alpha-gal syndrome, especially with serious consequences, you're going to say, the only solution for me is zero animal products, okay? I have to avoid these things because I have these terrible reactions. We're going to talk about how those of you that say, hey, I just want to drink more water, or I just want to get a little bit more exercise. How can we use this same principle, this all or none principle, and cause it to work for us? That's where we're going in our next segment on today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're talking about making lifestyle changes. Can be life-saving lifestyle changes. How you can be more likely to be successful. That's coming up in our next segment. I'm Dr. DeRose. Stay by.
American Indian and Alaska Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today about New Year's resolutions. Whether you're listening to this when the show was released in January of 2026 or any time after, we're really transcending New Year's resolutions, and we're talking about making lifestyle changes at any time of the year. I want to talk with you about an illustration, and we'll get back to where we were about how you can be successful with incremental changes. I'm going to tell you a story that we included in our book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control. So if you've got high blood pressure and you've been to a dietitian recently, it's very likely that that dietitian shared details with you that are found in our book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control. We have a chapter there, especially focused on nutrition for high blood pressure, and we describe how many people are sensitive to salt. And one of the things that's driving their high blood pressure is increased salt consumption. And some of you might say, hey, I heard something that doesn't make any difference. Well, there are some people that seem like they can eat just lots of salt and it doesn't seem to bother them. But there are clearly people whose salt seems to be a driver of higher blood pressure. So as a result, many individuals have been told to decrease their salt consumption. So here we're not talking about an all or none decision. Remember in the last segment, we were talking about things where real power behaviorally in all or none decisions, but sometimes you actually can't make an all or none decision. It is true with sodium and sodium chloride. Your body needs sodium. You have to have some salt, if you will, because it is needed for muscle function, for nerve function. If you say, I'm going to go on a zero sodium diet, you're not ingesting any salt at all, you will die. And you say, oh, come on, huh? You'll die? No, I'm serious. If there is no sodium, now, natural foods have sodium, some in it, usually not much. And of course, if you're buying any kind of prepared food, they typically have lots and lots of sodium. I'll give you some practical pointers on this topic before we finish this segment. But where I'm going with this is zero sodium, incompatible with life. So we're all going to eat some sodium. By the way, I've never met... Well, I should be careful. We're taught in medicine never to say never. I have had patients over the years that either run low blood pressure or have other problems where we encourage them to have more salt, to increase their salt consumption. But those people are few and far between. We see a lot more people with fluid buildup problems. We call it edema, swelling in their legs. Maybe they have heart failure. Maybe they have kidney problems. And we're working with them to try to limit their sodium consumption. Now, before you get too excited about this, if you are on medicine for kidney issues or heart issues, dramatically changing your sodium intake decreasing it even could cause problems because you're likely on medicines, diuretics, you know, water pills or other things that have been prescribed based on your typical lifestyle. So before you make any dramatic changes, especially with diseases like diabetes and high blood pressure, I always encourage individuals, talk with your prescribing provider. Make sure that they're on the same page with you so that you don't get into trouble with the medications you're taking. Okay, let's say you're on no medicines at all. Let's say you have problems with fluid buildup. Your blood pressure's rising. You say, hey, DeRose was talking about maybe decreasing my salt. Let me see what I can do. Again, we're not trying to get you to leave off all your salt. That would be deadly. You're going to still be eating some sodium. In fact, you look at the research and you find just what we found, and that is most Americans getting way too much salt if you just cut your salt by about 30%. And I'll tell you a practical way to do that in just a moment. But let's say you're going to cut your sodium intake 30%, or in the case of the story that I'm going to tell you, it's actually a research study published years ago in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Fascinating study. What they did is they had people dramatically decrease their salt intake. And what happened? You can guess when they tasted the food with that dramatically lessened amount of sodium. How did it taste? You're right, not good. But something interesting happened. As they monitored these folks over the course of a year, they continued to check their sodium preferences. It was an ingeniously designed study. They had different soups with different concentrations of sodium that the researchers knew, and they were letting the people try these each week and say, well, which one do you prefer? What happened was, as you got into week one and then week two and three, their sodium preference gradually decreased. Now, a lot of people, when I ask them the question, I say, how long do you think it took these folks to start liking the low sodium foods that they were now eating? Or put another way, how long did it take for them to fully develop an appreciation and enjoyment for food that was significantly less salty? The answer in the research is 3 months. In other words, throughout a 3-month period, their desire for sodium was continually decreasing until it finally reached a level. In this research, they actually preferred foods that were about half as salty as they used to like them. Now, here's why this is so exciting. If you're thinking about making lifestyle changes, it's very likely the main thing holding you back is to say, well, I don't want to change this. I like this. In fact, most of the things that you're doing habitually you like, or you would have stopped doing them long ago, right? So if you've got a, quote, bad habit, usually you've been getting some benefit from that, quote, bad habit. You enjoyed it. You do that bad habit with your friends, whatever it might be, or you don't do that bad habit with your friends. In other words, maybe you hate to exercise because you like playing board games with your neighbors. So here's the interesting thing. If you're catching the implications of what I'm sharing, you have the ability to develop new enjoyments. Are you catching this? So you say, but listen, I don't want to quit. Let's go back to Zachary in my opening story. If you weren't with us, talked about a guy who had really bad arthritis, was looking at having to lose weight, having to stop smoking. And let's say Zachary says, but I love smoking, and it's one of the most enjoyable things that I do. He said, I don't want to quit. But he realizes the surgeon is not going to do the surgery unless he stops smoking. And he starts thinking about it, and he says, wait a minute, there's research suggesting that if I can improve my circulation, I may be able to avoid the surgery. And so let's say he decides to make a clean break with the cigarettes. Now, in that case, with an addiction, you've got to make a clean break. I mean, if you want to have maximal success when you're dealing with an addiction, you got to get rid of all the tobacco, not just cut down. You've perhaps gone on that. I'll leave you to decide how you deal with ceremonies that use tobacco, but I'm specifically speaking about those addictive products that you've been using. You've got to get away from them completely. And many people will tell you, hey, you know, I went to a ceremony and it didn't work. It got me right back into the addictive behavior. So I'll leave you to decide that. But here's where we're going with this. That's not the case with sodium. With sodium, you can decrease your consumption. And at first, the foods are not going to taste good. You say, well, how do I know how to decrease my sodium? I promised you that I would tell you that. So here's what we do. If you're going through one of our free online programs, you're likely to learn this there. If you've been through the program already, you've probably heard it. This is not original with me, but someone, some wise individual, if I knew who they were, I'd give them credit. But they said, you know what? When we look at how much sodium people are eating, if they were just eating less sodium, less milligrams of sodium than calories they eat per day, they would be dramatically decreasing their sodium consumption if they're like the average American. So here's the simple rule of thumb. If you're eating fruits, whole grains, vegetables, you know, you're cooking the grains from scratch, you're cooking it yourself, you're making your own cornmeal, you don't need to worry about the sodium content of those things, okay? When you're getting food right from plant sources, from the earth. Now, some people say, but wait, you know, this food has higher sodium in it. Practically speaking, I tell people, don't be concerned about that as far as using this rule of thumb. And here's what we recommend. We say, look at just two things on the nutrition facts label. Look at how many milligrams of sodium are in the food and compare it to the number of calories. So look at a serving, and let's say I have a hypothetical bag of corn chips in front of me. It really is hypothetical. There's no food in this area where I'm recording, okay? So I'm looking at that bag of corn chips, and let's say it says 120 calories per serving. Now, would you like to guess how many milligrams of sodium are in that bag of corn chips? It's interesting. Many people find this surprising. But many corn chips are relatively low in sodium, even though they taste very salty. So it may be 120 calories and only 80 milligrams of sodium. So I'm not saying this is an ideal health food, but I'm saying if all you're looking at is the amount of sodium, that would be an acceptable food choice because there's fewer milligrams of sodium per serving the number of calories. You say, well, that's crazy. I'm going to go to the grocery store right now and look at those corn chips. You'll find, by and large, what I'm telling you is true. I'm sure you can find an exception. The flip side is represented by corn flakes. Look at a variety of brands. Now, you might find some that are low in sodium. But if you find a box of corn flakes that is 120 calories, there's a good chance it's going to have 200 milligrams of sodium in it or more. Substantially more sodium, milligrams of sodium than calories. So my message to you is if you're wanting to make a difference in your sodium consumption, start reading labels. Now, we also have people do this if they're trying to decrease their sugar consumption. Again, the most powerful behavioral decision can be difficult, but I have had patients, and I've done it myself because I had a real problem with sweets years ago, where I just said, I'm not going to eat anything that has added sugar in it. Now, that's pretty dramatic. But let's just say you did that. That's pretty clear cut. But let's say you say, well, I'm not ready to do that, but I am eating too much sugar. It's raising my triglycerides. It's contributing to my weight problems. The doctor has said it is making my diabetes more difficult to control. So what could you do? Here's two other things you can look at on the nutrition facts label. This time what you're going to do is you are not going to look at the calories. You're not going to look at the milligrams of sodium. Of course, that was very relevant for our initial illustration. But what you're going to do now is you're going to look at the carbohydrates in the food. So you're going to look at two specific things on the carbohydrate content, okay? And if you're wanting more information about this and you go through our free 30-day program, 30 Days to Better Health, I'll give you that website one more time before we finish. You'll find it on day 17. Day 17, we talk about decreasing sugar consumption, okay? But the two things we're going to have you look at are the total carbohydrates in grams and the grams of sugar. And I'm going to just have you divide the two. Take total grams of carbohydrate. In the example in the book, we have 24 total grams of sugar. 3. 24 divided by 3 is what? 8. You got it. Is that good or bad? That's actually good. We say make sure there's at least 5 times as much total carbohydrate as sugar, and this will be a relatively low sugar food. I'm Dr. DeRose. I'm talking with you about pointers to help you be successful when it comes to lifestyle change. We're going to tell you again about our free program, how you can access it, as well as some other very important considerations if you want to be successful in making lifestyle changes. One final segment coming up right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back for our final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I'm speaking to you about things that can help you be in the driver's seat when it comes to making lifestyle changes, how you can be successful, whether it is a New Year's resolution or something that you need to do for your health, for a surgery that's coming up, or just maybe to increase the likelihood of living longer and better. Whatever the motivations are, we're talking about practical strategies. Some of the things we've discussed are the amazingly good news that we can develop new enjoyments. They've shown this not just with sodium intake, they've shown it with fat intake. I've met people who had all kinds of habits that they broke away from, and now the last thing they want to do is engage in that habit. It's distasteful to them. They have no enjoyment in it, but they enjoy living a healthier lifestyle. Having said all that, we want to fulfill a promise that I made to you in the last segment. I said I'd give you information again about how you can be part of our free 30-day lifestyle program. We call it 30 Days to Better Health. 30 Days to Better Health. And you can sign up for it at our sister website, which is timelesshealinginsights.org. Timeless, meaning good forever. There's no time restriction on it. Timelesshealinginsights, plural.org. Go to that website, go down to 30 Days to Better Health, and you can sign up for that free program. I will meet with you virtually on a daily basis for 30 days. I say virtually, it's not in real time. These are recorded messages, videos that you will watch or listen to, and it will walk you through a pretty comprehensive lifestyle change program We designed that program originally based on our book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control. We expanded the concepts to deal with diabetes as well. So it's a great review. If you've gone through a diabetes program or a high blood pressure program, I'm thinking of one of the tribes, actually a tribal health group that I worked with some years ago. They found the videos useful to show in some of their community programs. They had people go through a structured diabetes program, and then some of the follow-up programs they use, some of those short videos. You can use them however you want. They're free. If you want to use them as a tribal health director or in your workplace, whether you're native or not, that is our gift to you. But coming back to the whole challenge of making lifestyle changes and getting them to stick, after all, anyone can make a change, but can you get that change to stick? I want to talk with you about something that we spent a fair amount of time in our book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control, discussing, and it has to do with characteristics of a successful lifestyle change goal. In other words, can you set a goal that is more likely to be achieved as opposed to a goal that's more likely to fail? Now, we started this show by talking about someone who needed to lose some weight, and I want to go back to that topic. Of course, today, we've got a lot of options out there for weight reduction. There are surgical strategies. There are medication strategies. And I'm dealing with a lot of patients right now who are getting stressed by some of the options that seem to be changing. Maybe certain insurance options are not covering certain things that were helping them to lose weight. Maybe you just want to avoid anything that is pharmacological or surgical, and you're saying, what can I do to get some pounds down? Whether it's for joint problems, whether it's for your diabetes, your blood pressure, losing weight if you're overweight has far-reaching benefits. So let me tell you something I learned when I was running a hospital weight loss program quite a few years ago. I learned something quite interesting, and that was that people often had realistic goals as far as their weight. No. They had real goals, but they were unrealistic. How would I know they were unrealistic? Let's say someone comes into my office and I say, how much do you weigh right now? Or we've weighed them. We know how much they weigh. And I say, do you have a goal weight? Let's say the person weighs 250. They say, yes, my goal weight is 110. I'm 5 foot tall. That's what I weighed when I was younger. I said, well, how much younger were you? When did you last weigh 110? And they say, probably 7 or 8 years old. Now, what am I thinking? I'm thinking, if you didn't weigh that weight till you last were 7 or 8 years old, it's not likely that's a realistic goal. Now, I know some of you might say, well, Dr. DeRose, I'm not going to see you for weight loss because you would just discourage me. No, what I'm interested in doing is having people set realistic goals. And here's what I tell people when it comes to weight. Whenever you base a goal on numbers, that is usually not a realistic goal. You say, but wait a minute, you just told a story at the beginning of this show where someone had to get their weight down to 300 pounds. They had to have a number goal. Well, here's the challenge. You may have no idea, if you're like most people, what really an ideal weight for yourself is. You say, oh, no, I looked at that chart, or I did the body mass index. You know, they told me it should be this. Here's the problem. There is no chart in the world, no program in the world, that can take into account all of the factors that influence your body weight. You may be aware that what was happening to your mother when she was pregnant with you is affecting your future history as far as weight, as far as diabetes risk, high blood pressure. So it's not just you and the choices you make that determine things. It's what was happening in the womb. It's what happened in your early life history. It's genetic factors. It's environmental factors. A lot of things that can't even be measured. How can you go back and measure what was happening in the womb 50 years ago, you know, if you're 51? Say, Dr. DeRose, it doesn't work that way. How can you measure what was happening in the womb some 50 years ago if you're living right now in your early 50s? So here's where I'm sharing this with you. The most powerful goals are what we call behavioral goals. They're not numerical goals. Yes, you may want to get your triglycerides down or your cholesterol down or your blood pressure down. And I'm not saying it's inappropriate to have goals like that, but those are things that you can't fully control. You can control your behaviors. And so I recommend that people set behavioral goals. Many times when you set the right behavioral goals, you'll reach those numeric goals. And if you don't reach those numeric goals, it didn't mean that you didn't make good behavioral choices and that you're not making progress and you're not helping your health for the long haul. But it may just be that because you got bad genetics or bad influences in the womb, not because of anything wrong that your mother did, but because of circumstances she was dealing with. Maybe she was ill. Maybe your kidneys didn't develop properly. Yes, it's true. Development of the filtering units in your kidney, we call them the glomeruli, is one of the determinants of risk of high blood pressure later in life. What I'm simply saying is we can't change all those things that happened in the past. And if you end up making great behavioral choices, but you still have problems with your numbers, there are other options. There are supplements, there are medications, there are natural things, pharmacologic things, even surgical things that can be employed. So, with that in mind, let me tell you what good lifestyle goals look like. Behavioral goals, what do they look like? We use a mnemonic, a memory device, in our blood pressure book that has been used by many health educators over the years. I'm not sure when I first heard it. I may have heard it in my master's in public health classes on health behavior change, but I think it was even before that. And we call them SMART goals. SMART, S-M-A-R-T. And although different people say the letters represent different things, it's all pretty much the same idea. The S stands for specific. The M is for measurable. The A in SMART is for action-oriented. You see, I'm spelling the word SMART. Specific, measurable, action-oriented. Each letter in the word SMART represents something else. R is realistic, and T is time-phased. So let me explain to you how this works. We've already been talking about realistic, and you're the only one who can decide whether something is realistic or not, or you can see how it plays out, and you say, hey, that wasn't a realistic goal. You can always refine your goals. But why specific and measurable? I have found over the years, many people have told me things like, oh, I'm going to cut down on my sweets, or I'm going to increase my exercise, or I'm going to drink more water. Now, those may all be great behavioral goals, but they're not SMART goals with that mnemonic. The SMART goals are specific and measurable. So what would a specific measurable goal look like? If you're not drinking much water, a specific measurable goal might be starting at the beginning of the year, or starting February 1, or starting on my birthday, I am going to plan to drink 4 8-ounce glasses of water per day. Now, am I saying 4 8-ounce glasses of water per day is optimal? No, I'm not saying that. But I am saying if you're drinking no water at all, drinking 4 8-ounce glasses of water per day would likely be a boon to your health. But what you've done is you've changed that from just drinking more water to something being specific and measurable. Those specific measurable goals, and going back to the beginning of the show, specific measurable goals that are realistic and that you share with someone else are goals that you are most likely to be successful with going forward. Well, I'm Dr. David DeRose. I hope some of the things that we shared with you today can help you as you transition to a healthier lifestyle going forward. Again, if you want some practical tips, you want me to walk you through some of these things, join me for our free 30-day lifestyle program. We call it 30 Days to Better Health. You can find it at timelesshealinginsights.org. For all of us at American Indian and Alaska Native Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.